You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
With the 21st pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Green Bay Packers select Paha Clinton Dix.
It's time for the Packers War Room Podcast.
Made me a believer into really thinking that the Packers really could run the table, and that was when I said right away, they're winning the NFC North.
The time to join us was just a moment that I'll never forget. For him to be able to get behind the corner and really just catch the prayer, essentially, was just quintessential Packers 2016.
Like I said, for this team to win two playoff games was just astounding with how beat up they were and the state of their defense, really.
And now, alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer, here's your host of the Packers War Room Podcast, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Packers War Room Offseason Podcast. This is the big news edition. I am your host, Ross Uglum. I'm a writer at CheeseheadTV.com, and joining me, as always, is Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how's it going?
Going well. A lot of news has come since last week. We didn't realize there would be this much news, but we knew there would at least be a little bit. But yeah, excited to be back and talk a little Packers offseason.
Certainly, and joining us, of course, is resident draft expert, part-time contributor to Cheesehead TV, Cody Bauer. Cody, how's it going this evening?
Going great, man. Ready to talk some linebackers with you, touch on free agency. Exciting time.
Yeah, speaking of being exciting times, this is a lot more exciting than most Packers offseasons. Generally, Ted's been a guy to just kind of re-sign his own and pretend that nobody else in the league exists, and that has not happened at all. We're going to kind of jump around a bit here, but we're going to at least touch on all the major moves one by one, and we'll start with one of the more recent things that has gone on, and that is former first-round pick Dayton Jones signing with the Minnesota Vikings, going the way of, you know, Ryan Longwell, Darren Sharper, Brett Favre, Greg Jennings, lots and lots of ex-Packers that have ended up wearing the purple and gold for whatever reason. And Dayton Jones is going to be the latest, in my opinion, kind of a guy that was supposed to play a position because he played that position in a pro-style defense in college. And just never fit, was never supposed to really hang that much weight on himself. Looks like much of a, I really think is more of a 275-pound athlete than he is a 305-pound athlete. And so he'll play some three technique and some strong side defensive end for the Minnesota Vikings, which unfortunately will likely be a better fit for him. Cody, what are your thoughts on Dayton with the Vikings?
Yeah, I think natural fit for him is more of a 4-3. You know, coming out of college, he did play the 3-4-5 tech at UCLA, but, you know, in the NFL, just at his 285, you know, where he was comfortable at, just wasn't getting the job done on the inside. And as you mentioned, you know, a couple body transformations later, he's playing stand-up edge rusher. He was coming along. He was a disruptive player. He just didn't exactly have the stats to back it up. But I think to work in a rotation with Griffin and Robeson, I think it's going to actually bode really well for him. He was starting to figure it out. The light was starting to come on. His injury pass was kind of getting behind him some. I don't love that he's in the division. The contract that he signed was reasonable. I wouldn't mind to see Ted pull the trigger at that. But, you know, good for him getting another shot in a one-year prove-it deal, I think. In the 4-3, I think he can make himself some money this year, you know, in that role of a rotational D-lineman.
Yeah, he's certainly a much better player than Brian Robinson. So, yeah, as you mentioned, it's maybe not the greatest thing in the world. Jacob, are you going to miss I Am Dat One?
A little. I mean, he was just a guy that was kind of miscast in this defense. And you kind of saw the Packers, according to Zach Cruz from the Packers Wire, never really made an offer or an effort to bring him back. And Dayton Jones reportedly wanted to come back, and it takes two to tango. And if the Packers didn't want to bring him back, it's one of those stories. If you can't really, start replacing players and get better on defense and bring everybody back from the previous year as well. But At the same time, it's a guy who played 1 year as an edge rusher, and I thought with limited snaps, did some good things. He didn't have the highest sack numbers, but he did lead the team in hurries. And I thought was doing some good things for a guy that was really just kind of learning on the fly. I would have liked to have seen what he could do with Julius Peppers not in the fold this year or something of that sort. Now he goes to Minnesota with Mike Zimmer. And those guys out there, they do a really good job of developing edge rushers. And, I mean, I'm not going to say it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's not the not the most comforting feeling to know that they're getting a talented player in Minnesota, unlike in previous years where, you know, you mentioned some of the guys that have traded in their green and gold for purple and gold, and most of those guys were either washed up or past their prime, or in the case of Greg Jennings, gone from playing with Aaron Rodgers to playing with Christian Ponder. In this case, they're getting a young player that they can mold, and I think that that's a possibility that they find a way to unlock some potential that the Packers couldn't.
Yeah, scheme fit, I think there is an issue. And I really think that there is going to be a veteran edge rusher brought in. And unfortunately, we're not going to know anything because that Connor Barwin smoke was some pretty rare smoke. And what I mean by that is, just in general, the Green Bay Packers are not really an organization that is going to let you know before they sign somebody that they have interest. You know, nobody even knew Martellus Bennett was in Green Bay. Lance Kendricks was absolutely out of the blue. Devon House was supposedly signing in Pittsburgh when he agreed in Green Bay. This kind of stuff just sort of keeps happening. And so I really think they're trying to remake their pass rush group. And I just have a hard time believing that they think the best and only way to go about that is going to be with a rookie. I think that they have something else up their sleeve. Most would probably, you know, tell you or believe that it's Barwin. I'm not 100% convinced that that's the case, but it certainly at this point seems to make the most sense. Another guy going to a division rival, TJ Lang. This one kind of hits you in the feel spot. TJ was a second contract player for the Packers, was extended after his rookie season, part of some really good offensive lines, part of one of the greatest guard tandems in team history with Josh Sitton. One of his best friends ended up going to the Bears, and now TJ's with the Lions. So kind of a mirror image there of what happened. But as far as I'm concerned, guards are guards. I completely understand not wanting to pay $8 million for a guard. Ted drafted a thick offensive tackle and a thin offensive tackle last year. If you know anything about Ted, that generally means that the thick offensive tackle is getting kicked inside, and the other one is going to be the swing tackle for the next couple of years until something happens with either Bakhtiari or Bulaga. So I really think that you're going to get into a situation where the Packers are going to be fine at guard, because if you've got a good center and two good tackles, you can get away with a lot at guard, especially with Lane Taylor being in a kind of an up-and-coming young player. Jacob, how upset are you by the Lang news?
At the initial report of the news, I just saw that it was a 3-year deal. The first thing I wanted to see was, you know, how much money is it? And then, you know, obviously you saw the Packers had their number, and they kind of dug in there. It was, you know, they said the report was it was about 3 years at $21 million with about $6.5 million guaranteed. And I think, I mean, I know the market is what it is, but that's kind of the school of thought for the Packers as far as guards go. I think that's a fair offer based on what they know, they believe, and these are the principles they stick to. The Lions decided to give him $19 million guaranteed. It's an opportunity for him to go home. I can't blame TJ Lang for that. The reason it sucks, as you mentioned, in the short term, there's a big hole at right guard, and we don't know who's going to fill it. I know that between now and April 27th, there's going to be a lot of mocking of Forrest Lamp or Ryan Ramczyk or guys like that to kick inside and play right guard. I can't promise, because I don't speak with Ted Thompson on a regular, but I can almost promise that the Packers are not going to take a guard in the first round. I feel very confident saying that. That's the main reason that it sucks, is because you don't know who the right guard's going to be. What I do know is, Ross, you mentioned it, you have five offensive line spots, and four of them you feel pretty good about, and the main reason I can think right here is, as long as the plan is not Don Barclay, I feel okay with what the successor plan is going to be, because I know Ted Thompson certainly has his faults, But something he's very good at is finding offensive linemen in the middle rounds. And if you don't believe that, look no further than, exclude Brian Bulaga, but look no further than left tackle, left guard, and center for the Packers right now. Look at the guys that just left and Sitton and Lang. There's plenty of guys that they have drafted in the fourth round or later that have stepped in and played very well. Maybe that guy is Kyle Murphy. Maybe he's ready to make a jump. Maybe they draft a guy in the third or fourth round this year. We don't know. But it just kind of, you know, you mentioned it from a sentimental standpoint. It hits you in the feels. He's one of Aaron Rodgers' best friends. Rodgers made a point to say something on Twitter. That was the guy that he always seemed to celebrate his touchdowns with. So from that point, it stinks. But from a business standpoint, I understand it. They don't want to pay a guard for that much money. That's how they operate. That's what Ted Thompson believes, and that's what they did. So I understand it. It's just unfortunate that they couldn't find a way to work something out.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's such thing as a hole at guard. I mean, it's a fun position, I guess, if you're a football nerd to kind of talk offensive line and stuff like that. But, you know, there have been some teams with some pretty bad interior offensive linemen that have won plenty of games. The point of the game is tackle, really. And beyond that, center. And I'm not just saying that because the Packers have three good tackles and a good center. I'm saying that because that's just how team building works nowadays. And I think, you know, like I said, the Packers have three starter quality tackles, and they'll move forward with that. Cody, your thoughts on the Lang deal?
Well, not too much more to touch on. You guys covered it pretty well. I kind of wanted to loop in our Jason Treader talk here, just kind of tie up the guards situation. I think we were all kind of in agreement when we first started the podcast talking about our priority free agents. Lang was, I don't know if he was an off top three for all of us or just close. I understand Perry was there, but you know, Jacob, you had mentioned you had the solid five starting offensive linemen. Why would you, you know, break up such a strength of your team like that? That part, like, resonates with me. I understand that. It was discouraging to see Lane go, but, hell, at $19 million versus $6 million guaranteed money, he'd be stupid not to go. And I think you just kind of have to accept his decision and move on there. As far as the Treader talk, you know, I'm sorry if I'm going out of order here, but to see what he signed for, I thought he would have been more likely a target for Green Bay, a little bit younger, a little bit more versatile, well, not quite as versatile, I suppose. But I think seeing the money, the dollars and cents between, you know, the two contracts, I wish they would have probably made a play for Treader. So he didn't have a quote-unquote hole. I agree with you guys. Guard is a pretty insignificant position in the grand scheme of things, and I know Thompson feels the same way. So it's not the end of the world that they both walked. However, you know, seeing the money at the end of the day, you know, it would have been great to bring back J.C. Treader, but it is what it is. You find somebody and you move on.
The next big signing, I guess I wouldn't say necessarily that it's a division rival, but certainly a team the Packers have tussled with in recent years, and that is running back Eddie Lacy is now a Seattle Seahawk. That something else that just happened today. Eddie met with the Vikings, met with the Seahawks, and then apparently met with the Green Bay Packers. And if the timeline's correct, basically agreed to play for the Seahawks while in Green Bay. Cody, what are your thoughts on the Lacy situation?
On a personal standpoint, I'm a little bit bummed. Well, I've been a Lacy fan. But then you hear reports today coming out that he's 267, just coming off his bad ankle injury, had a concussion before, hasn't really been right for a while. So I understand Thompson not willing to shell out a lot of money, but I'm a little bit bummed that we couldn't bring him back for something similar or that he didn't want to come back or however it worked out, you know, in between discussions with them. I'm a big Lacy fan. I think right now, looking at basically just Montgomery and Don Jackson on the active roster, running back, again, is an insignificant position in the grand scheme of your 22 starters. But, you know, having him and Montgomery, I thought, would have been a great 1-2 punch heading into the year, especially on Lacy on a proven one-year deal that he just got with Seattle. But $3 million guaranteed, $5 million with incentives. Best of luck to him in Seattle, I suppose, but I'm a little bit bummed that we couldn't work out something similar to him and go into the year with Monty and him, but I understand.
Well, that's the weird part. It certainly seemed like they sort of had a deal in place. I mean, Domofsky had a number, and that number was, more than double is what he ended up signing for in Seattle. They were talking about something like $2.5 million for a year. Seattle gave him more than five. Probably a tough thing to reconcile if you're the Packers. Jacob, your thoughts on the Lacy situation?
I mean, you mentioned it. According to Tom Silverstein, they said that the Packers offered a similar contract and so did the Vikings. And Lacy probably just took the tiebreaker in the fact that the Seahawks are a run-first offense. The Packers are a shotgun spread, throw it all over the field first offense. And I wondered even if he came back what his role exactly was going to be, because Ty Montgomery is here, and with that kind of offense, Montgomery fits better in that anyways. He's a little bit more of a natural pass catcher, obviously, because he's a wide receiver. And he's faster, he's quicker in the hole. You mentioned those things. And you also mentioned, Cody, that this is a perfect analogy of how everything on social media works. Eddie Lacy signs with the Seahawks, and there's mass hysteria, complaints about how there's this giant hole at running back, which I don't know that there's such a thing, because we just saw last year a converted receiver is playing running back, and the Packers are one game away from the Super Bowl. But I digress. The Lacy signs with the Seahawks. There's mass hysteria complaining about a hole at running back. And then that report comes out from, I believe it was Bob McGinn who first tweeted it, that said Lacy weighed in on one of his free agent visits. We don't know which one, but he weighed in at one of them at 267 pounds.
Let's blame the Vikings.
All right, I blame the Vikings. He weighed in at the Vikings. Okay. So if the Packers had signed Lacy and then that report surfaced that he weighed in at 267 pounds, there would have been complaints about the Packers signing an overweight, uncommitted running back. I say all that to say, yes, Lacy's a good player, and I think some of his weight issues were overblown. At the same time, I got a hard time. I'm like kind of in the middle on it. Some of his weight issues are overblown, but at the same time, when you weigh almost 270 pounds after that much time off, I do have questions about your commitment level to the sport, your commitment level to the team that drafted you, your commitment level to this game in general. And I don't know what the Seahawks are going to get. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to get the best out of him, because that's kind of what they do out there. But the Packers, I almost think they're better off without him. They don't have to answer those kinds of questions. They can find a better fit for the offense that they want to run.
Brian Hill!
Ross has got a cold, and it says Brian Hill, apparently, out of North Carolina. So you got that there. You could find another running back. Whenever that happens, Ty Montgomery's there. But I think you're better off without him. And I know that we all fell in love with Eddie Lacy early because the Packers had no resemblance of a running game whatsoever. This guy comes in, he's spinning all over the place. He's got a big, goofy smile. He loves cartoons. He's running over people, and he was awesome for a few years. It just, for whatever reason, didn't work out his last two seasons in Green Bay, and he's probably better off moving on. And we'll see what happens as he moves on to his career elsewhere. But it was probably just time.
Hey, Brian Hill of Belleville, Illinois, went and attended college at the Fighting Craig Bowles of the University of Wyoming.
Oh, excuse me, I misspoke.
So you remember that. speaking okay. of...
Wyoming.
Yeah, speaking of guys that I have personal attachments to, I kind of want to pour one out for Micah Hyde. An Iowa Hawkeye, a Swiss Army knife, if you will, of defenders. I think really an extremely underrated punt returner and just a glue guy in the secondary that could fill in at any spot. But it's this phenomenon that you and I have talked about all day, Jacob. In January, it's why haven't they released all these shitty defensive players? All right? Now it's March. Why aren't they re-signing any of these wonderful defensive players? What? I don't understand it. So I think the Hyde not released, but the Hyde non-renewal has a little bit to do with a defense-wide effort to get bigger, stronger, faster. And I really think you're going to see that. We'll talk about it a little bit when we get to the safety group, but I would not sleep on Green Bay taking a safety. I really believe that because I think you're going to end up with Burnett playing linebacker this year, and maybe they believe in Kentrell Bryce, but I don't know who in the world on this roster is the backup free safety. That is legitimately scary stuff. It might honestly be Demarius Randall. I don't know who would come in there. We can talk about that when we get to safeties, but that used to be Micah Hyde. It's not now. Clinton Dix, of course, played every snap last season, but Hyde is now a Buffalo Bill. Cody, what are your thoughts on the Hyde signing?
I think, he's fan favorite because of his versatility. You know, a guy we mentioned does everything really good, but does nothing great. Isn't really a huge liability when he's in the game. But he's an upgradable spot. You know, if you call him a corner, he's an upgradable corner. You call him a safety, he's an upgradable safety. Call him a punt returner, you're right, he's a damn good punt returner. But, you know, combining them all, he does become a versatile piece. Is he a $6 million a year piece? No, Buffalo thought so. Packers, you know, clearly did not. In fact, they didn't even offer him anything. So they must have found him expendable, you know, regardless of the money. But the deal would have had to come in a little bit lower for me to get on board with a re-signing of him. At $6 million a year, I'm glad he got his money from Buffalo. I think I wish all these guys well because, you get an attachment after 3-4 years of watching these guys, but, you know, at the money that he got, I hope Buffalo knows what they're getting. They're not getting the lockdown corner. They're not getting the guy who can blanket tight ends. And they're not getting the guy who can patrol the deep part of the field. They're getting just the versatile guy who can step in and occasionally make a play, as we saw, you know, in the playoffs last year. He's prone to make a good player here and there, but overall, he's just an average to very good player in everything, but not great in any of them. So, I understand why they didn't bring him back. You mentioned drafting a safety. You know, that's a possibility. But, I mean, it does create another, I don't want to say hole, but another position in the secondary that, okay, we'll bring in Devon House, but is he either going to be the fill-in for Hyde, or do you go after another versatile chess piece like him, or you just try to get a guy anywhere who's, you know, at DB or at safety who's just a better player than him? And, you know, there's a lot of different options for the Packers to do, but, you know, they didn't feel that he was worthy of $6 million to be just a versatile piece. So,
Jacob, your thoughts on Hyde? I know you were critical of him and then kind of came around but never quite got to where I was on the deal.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I had just gotten to that point. But, I mean, it's still where I'd gotten to the point of where I'd come around was because he made that incredible play against the Dallas Cowboys. That play has made the film room. He would have had a touchdown on that same exact thing a few weeks prior on Christmas Eve against the Vikings if Clay Matthews' hand didn't get in the way. And I can't believe I just knocked Clay Matthews for getting his hands up and making a play. But, yeah, reality is we were talking about, you know, how in order to upgrade on the defense, you have to let some guys go. My eyes about popped out of my skull when I saw the money that Hyde got because the reality is he's not very good in man coverage. He's not very fast. He's average to above in the things that he's quote-unquote good at, and the things he's not good at are pretty poor. And, you know, some of the things that the Packers defense, I know that they'll say, you know, the detractors, the guys that are complaining about Hyde leaving will say, well, that leaves a hole in the secondary, and this secondary was already bad last year. Well, the reality also is Hyde was part of the reason that the secondary wasn't good last year. And that's not saying Hyde's a bad player, but Hyde was also part of the reason that they're bad or that they didn't have a very good year. I mean, I could still see him chasing Jordan Reed down the field in a wild card playoff game. He's not a lockdown player. In order to keep him at that contract, you would have had to, not that these are similar players, but you would have had to pay him more than you would have had to pay to keep Casey Hayward the previous season. Micah Hyde's not worth more money than Casey Hayward was, and that's just, again, you're comparing two different players, but it's the same sort of deal there. Hyde is, I wish him well in Buffalo. He's a good punt returner, but I think that's the biggest hole that he leaves in this secondary. I think he's something that can be upgraded from, and I think you said it best, it's an effort to get bigger, faster, and stronger, and emphasis on the phrase faster in the secondary, because if there was a big knock against Hyde, it was the fact that he did not have good foot speed. And you take that piece out of the secondary, you can add the new guy in there, whoever that is, there's the speed, because you're replacing one of your slower players on the defense, and you add some speed in there, you're good to go. Wish Hyde well in Buffalo. I hope Trevor Davis can return punts, because I still think he can be really good at that if he can catch them.
I think, you know, we've discussed the Treader thing a little bit on this show. Cody, of course, brought it up. He's going to be a Cleveland Brown. I'm pretty wishy-washy on it. I know, Jacob, you have issues with his ability to stay healthy. Anybody have any more comments on Treader?
No, I wasn't surprised he walked. I mean, it just seemed like the Packers never really were that interested in retaining him. I'm not sure why, what their reasoning was, I guess, for that, but not surprised that he walked.
Well, Jacob, the reason is because they have Del Barkley, of course.
Okay, now I'm going to throw up. Thank you.
I just think it has a lot to do with what they probably think of either Lucas Patrick or Kyle Murphy. That would be my guess on the whole deal. I don't have any inside information, but I just think, you know, it really seems to me like they believe that they've got it all figured out on the line. I think Don Barkley signed a league minimum deal with some playing time incentives to be, more likely than not the backup center, which I actually am completely okay with. I don't think that's a huge deal. I think you've got a guy that's been around this long that understands the offense as well as he does. I'm pretty all right with the backup center being Donnie, as old Mike McCarthy would say. Now, let's talk.
There's no upside with Donnie.
Go ahead.
There's no upside with Donnie. You're not developing him. You're not thinking that he can be a long-term spot. He's just really holding the roster spot, and he's a liability when he's in there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see if he was cut. You know, if they draft an offensive lineman, realize that Murphy, or like you said, Patrick, are developed enough, I wouldn't be surprised to see Donnie not on the team.
I don't really care if there's upside with Donnie, frankly, because I need to have someone that can play center if Lindsley gets hurt. And that's a skill. That's an actual skill.
And he's already hurt. Like, Lindsley's got surgery, and he's out until May. So, Lindsley's missed time.
I'm not disagreeing with you in any way that there is an upside. I think you're exactly right. I just don't care. I need somebody with the mental capacity to play center in an Aaron Rodgers offense, because Rodgers is tough on his teammates, period. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I like the accountability that he kind of maintains, but I can imagine playing with a hopeless center would be about as brutal for an offensive lineman as it could possibly get. I get what you're saying as far as no upside with Don Barkley, but if he is the backup center and there are no options on the roster beside him, you know, that's fine with it, because I don't even know if there was ever a time that Lindsley and Treader were both healthy at the same time. And the one thing Barkley has been able to do, at least, is be available. Now, granted, maybe it's not available to do great things, but he's at least been available. And his tape on the interior of the offensive line is not as criminal as his tape at tackle. Anyway, let's get to the exciting stuff. Let's get to the new members of the Green Bay Packers and the first unrestricted free agent signing in quite some time, and that is Martellus Bennett, formerly of a number of teams, formerly of the Chicago Bears, formerly of the Dallas Cowboys, who I believe drafted him, formerly of the most recent Super Bowl champion New England Patriots, where he was the main tight end at the end there because of Rob Gronkowski's injuries. Bennett is a very outspoken social media guy, kind of a political activist type guy, definitely has interests outside of football. Looks like he's got his own production company that is excited to get involved in Green Bay. And this man brings a lot of things to the table. Tox apparently broke down Jared Cook. A couple of reports surfaced that Green Bay was absolutely 100% in no way, shape, or form
going to re-sign Cook, and the people freaked out. The natives got super restless, but then found out not too long afterwards that the tight end position was getting upgraded by Martellus Bennett. Cook is a guy, in most of our opinions, that has never been good without Aaron Rodgers. Martellus Bennett has been a successful quarterback with, or excuse me, a successful tight end with a lot of different quarterbacks. And just because his QB last year was Tom Brady doesn't mean that he only works with Tom Brady, because he's been able to do a lot of different things. Cody, what has you most excited about the Martellus Bennett addition?
The upgrade in run blocking, as unexciting as that is. Going back to Jermichael was average at best. Richard Rodgers is average at best. Jared Cook is average at best. Now you bring in Bennett, who's downright above average to very good run blocker. I love what he does as an inline tight end. But, you know, his athleticism to also split out and be a pass catcher, you know, his versatility, a do-it-all tight end that we really haven't had in a long, long time, is really what gets me most excited. I enjoy his personality off the field. I'm not sure how well it'll sit in Green Bay, you know, depending on how comical it is. You know, we put up with Jermichael Finley for a little while, although he's probably taking a turn to the south these days. But anyway, Bennett, you know, he's just a character, outspoken, fun guy who's not afraid to, you know, say his mind. I bet you the beat guys are going to love having him in the locker room. But on the field, I love what he does as a versatile, well-rounded, you know, option at tight end. And, you know, his ability after the catch is outstanding. And his inline play is the best we've had, you know, really, really long time. So, you know, I'm excited. I think it's an upgrade, and I think most people around the fan base and league believe that's an upgrade.
Jacob, are you excited about the black unicorn?
That is the black unicorn. Yes, I don't know if that nickname surfaced when he was here in Chicago, or if that's something that he's called himself since forever. But yeah, when he arrived with the Bears, is when I learned about the moniker. And you mentioned Jared Cook only being successful with Aaron Rodgers. I watched this guy be successful with Jay Cutler, who I don't think is terrible, but he's not good, and Josh McCown, who I do think is terrible. This guy is everything Jared Cook was for the Packers and better. If you want to ask what I'm most excited about, Ross, you tweeted a yak monster vine. I don't know if that's still a thing, but it was a video of him stiff-arming Byron Maxwell. I don't know if Byron Maxwell is still living, but if he is, he might want to go into hiding. But Martellus Bennett just destroyed him. That little offensive pass interference, tight end screen thing that the Packers run, that play is going to be back this year. And by back, I don't mean that they're going to run it. I mean that it's actually going to be productive, because Martellus Bennett is a machine with that play. Cody mentioned the blocking part. He's a much better blocker than Jared Cook. He can make plays down the seam, so you actually see some of the big plays at that. And one of his first quotes from the Packers media was, "I can do a lot of shit," and that just made me laugh. And Ross, I think he quoted and said, "I think I'm in love." He's funny as hell. I'm excited to have somebody like that. I know that Packers fans may not like that at the beginning. I don't know if they will or not, but I love it. He's a big personality. He's a lot of fun. He's an interesting guy, but he really does care about winning. And as long as the Packers are successful, as you've seen, he won't be a problem. And as long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy, obviously they'll be successful. So, yeah, very excited. I've wanted Martellus Bennett in Green Bay since he was in Chicago. So very excited to add this guy to the fold. I think he's an upgrade in every way possible.
I really do, too. I mean, I think that the next guy we're going to talk about is like the repeat of the Jared Cook signing. Martellus Bennett doesn't need Aaron Rodgers to make him any better. He is one of the best 10 tight ends in the league. We never saw Jermichael Finley without Aaron Rodgers. I think Finn was probably a better player than Jared Cook, certainly at the peak of his powers. I think Martellus Bennett is the best tight end we've had in Green Bay for a really long time. you know, you talk about Finn, Wesley Walls for a minute there. That was really at the tail end of his career. Well, you had a lot of turnaround and stop in the end zone tight ends for a long time. Donald Lee, Bubba Franks, just guys that were not special. You have to go all the way back to Mark Chmura, Keith Jackson, when you had real dynamic tight ends. And I think that that is what Bennett really has the opportunity to be here with the Packers. Just because, I mean, I think he is so good with the football in his hands and is about to play with the all due respect to Tom Brady, he's about to play with the best thrower of the football that he's ever played with. And I think that that's got to be exciting for Bennett. Certainly should be exciting for Packers fans. But I really think that the interesting thing is the fact that Green Bay likely just made the Jared Cook signing part due. I think the Lance Kendrick signing, who was coming off of a 50-catch year with some of the worst quarterback play in all of football, are we looking at a Patriots light type of situation? Are we looking at the two tight end set becoming part of the offense in Green Bay, Jacob?
Yes, and you finally have two athletic tight ends that can block, catch the football, run down the seam. It's stuff that I feel like we've been talking about again since my first installment of Pulse of the Pack, since From the Benches, since, you know, whatever you want to call it. Two guys that can actually play the position and do all of the things well, instead of having one athlete, or some years maybe one athlete, if that's what you wanted to call Andrew Quarles. It still amazes me that Aaron Rodgers won an MVP, whereas tight ends were Richard Rodgers as a rookie and Andrew Quarles. And now we're about to have a year where it's Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams. Now Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks are in the – I mean, endless possibilities for this offense this year. I think you're going to see Mike McCarthy finally get back to that formation diversity that made him such a great play caller early in his Green Bay tenure during that Super Bowl season, where they'd have, you know, that full house backfield one play, and then the next play it was four wide receivers, and then they'd go too tight. I think you got a lot of different options, some positional diversity. There's a lot of things they can do with this offense. And the Lance Kendrick signing, 2 years, $4 million. I think eventually that's going to look like the Packers absolutely stole him, because you mentioned 50-catch year with Case Keenum and Jared Goff, and that's, I mean, that is some of the really worst quarterback play in the NFL, and now he gets to play with Aaron Rodgers. And the other good news is, if for some reason Martellus Bennett were to miss a game or two here or there with an injury, they're not relying on a below replacement value player at that position. Lance Kendricks can still do athletic things within the offense. They don't have to change everything within the offense. It's nice to see some actual athleticism at that position. So I love it. As soon as I read that, I was so excited to finally have us. I mean, we were talking about now earlier when we were talking about tight ends, we were talking about bring back Jared Cook and stash an athlete at that position. Now you have two athletes at that position. If value slaps them in the face, they can pick a tight end later, but they don't have to. So that's the nice part of this, these two signings as well, is they don't have to pick a player at that position if they don't feel that there's a player that presents value at that position. So a lot of good things happening at the tight end position. I'm just excited that they actually have two athletic players that can play that position and stretch the field.
Certainly. I mean, you're definitely talking about a situation where they don't have to draft a tight end for any reason. They can if they want to. You know, if they really love a guy, if they love the kid from Ashland, or they love Bucky Hodges, or they love somebody that they think can be a star someday, that can be a very good player in the 2019 season. That sounds fantastic, but it's certainly not anything that needs to happen because of the moves that they've just made. Because, you know, to be frank, one is a 3-year deal, the other one's a 2-year deal. You're not even looking at needing anybody else on the roster moving forward, especially if they, you know, just give 3 years and $6 million to Richard Rodgers to be that third tight end till we're all dead and gone. I really have no problem with that, frankly. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the actual schematics of the offense. Cody, what do you think of the Kendrick signing? Are you as excited as Jacob and I appear to be with this addition?
100%. I mean, I was excited before I even learned what the numbers were, and then to hear that two years, $4 million, that's a steal. I mean, this guy, I remember back going to Wisconsin, he was kind of towards the tail end of the tight end U lineage that was coming out of here. I thought he was an underrated blocker. I think he's a lot stronger at the point of attack than probably he gets credit for, only listed at 6'3". He's a bit of a body catcher, but you know, it hasn't really hindered his NFL successes as far as that goes. It's been more or less the terrible quarterback play. But, yeah, the two tight end set options that we have, the versatility that we could put out on offense is, you know, enough to get anybody excited. And both these guys can block, both these guys can catch. It's not like, well, Martellus is always going to be in the slot or Kendricks is always going to be split out or in line. You know, these guys are going to be, you know, interchangeable. I think it's just a great sign. I think number 12 should be pretty thrilled with those two signings and really just upgrade the position a hell of a lot.
Yeah, his case of shitty quarterback-itis is impressive and legitimately career-long. I'm very excited to see what Kendricks can do. Because honestly, I mean, when you think about it, in almost any situation, Lance Kendricks is going to be the fifth option. And this is a 50-catch tight end last year playing with, you know, I mean, just god-awful quarterbacks. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to end up being a steal. One of the most underrated, under-the-radar signings of the year. Yes, his pro football focus grade is not great. Yes, his tape is not great. It is hard to give a shit when you are that bad, and they were that bad. In L.A. this year, they really were, and he was checked out, and there's maybe not an excuse for that, but you know, we're gonna make him for him because he's a Green Bay Packer now. He gets to play with the best quarterback on the planet. It's exciting stuff. Then things got even more exciting today because Green Bay executed part one of my master plan to fix the secondary, which is A, sign one, boom, already done. We'll get to who it is in a second. B, draft one in the first two rounds. And C, have number 23 and number 24, Devontae. Devontae is a verb. It stands for make the second to third year jump even further than you were as a decent rookie to shut up the haters. And that is what we're looking for from Randall and Rollins, to be even better than they were as rookies in the third year, which would be absolutely miles and miles better than they were as sophomores, looking for that confidence boost, looking for that second and third year jump in Joe Witt's classroom. All those things very exciting. But the veteran corner, the number one true corner, maybe not a shutdown guy, but certainly somebody physically capable of messing around with 6'3", 6'4" physical receivers, and that is former Green Bay Packer Devon House. Devon House has re-signed with the Packers, I'm assuming for basically nothing, just because he had been benched by Jacksonville. But here's what people don't understand. I went back and looked at some tape today. You can check out my Twitter account at Ross Uglum. I've got some vines and some stuff on House up and available. They switched defenses, and they made House a zone corner instead of the press man corner that he came into this league basically to be. And that's what he said. He goes, I mean, that was our problem. And he was a good player. He had a lot of pass breakups. He had a very impressive season in 2015. You know what? He had a pretty impressive 2014 for the Green Bay Packers. It was one of the bright spots on a defense that maybe wasn't the greatest all the time. And he fills a need for the Packers in a huge, huge way as they continue to develop Demaryius Randall. They continue to develop Quentin Rollins. I think Ladarius Gunter kind of is what he is right now, and that is one of the better, I think, number four corners in football. And what I mean by that is a guy that you would never play inside, but a guy that can play outside in sub packages, a guy that if he's protected with the right coverages over the top, can really be a special sub package type of player, not a number one corner. Devon House is now the de facto number one corner. But with the abilities of Ha, Clinton Dix, Morgan Burnett, Kentrell Bryce, the Packers don't probably need a complete shutdown number one. They just need somebody who could physically match up with the Julio Joneses et cetera, et cetera. Calvin Johnson not in the league anymore. Cody, how excited are you about the Devon House re-signing?
I'm on board. I think there's kind of like an inevitable thing, right? When we heard that he was released, it was kind of just naturally thought of, oh, well, Green Bay needs a corner. He's released. It just makes too much sense. And, you know, I read through your Twitter feed and, you know, talked to a couple Jake War guys. And, you know, he wasn't great towards the end. But you're right. The switch in the defense has definitely hurt his play. I remember back to a game against Julio Jones where he was the only one who was able to contain him for us in 2014. He's had his moments here in Green Bay. He had a couple moments in Jacksonville before it fell off. But, you know, it's not ideal to thrust him into that number one spot. But as of right now, hell, he's the most talented, best corner we have on this team. I think, you know, it was a move that had to be made. I'm glad it was made. I just, you know, the temper, the expectations a little bit amongst the fan base is, you know, he was a guy who was, what, number three when he was here primarily to be thrust in the number one role. It might take a little time for him. We mentioned speed on defense, bringing it in. This guy who ran a 4.34 40 at his pro day. He's got speed. He's got the size. I'm a big fan of bringing it in. I don't think we're done at the position. Once Gilmore and Bowie sign their 14, 13, whatever, million-dollar contracts, hell, Kirkpatrick signed a $10 million deal. I mean, the signing of a house at whatever rate he's going to be under $3 million, I would imagine, it's going to be a nice secondary option for the Packers to patch up the spot that Hyde left and potentially for House to develop into a really good corner that's going to take on opposing teams' number one wide receivers.
And it's not necessarily even that House has to be the number one corner as any matches up with the best player, but you end up in situations now where you can match body types to body types, really, in that Devon House can play big receivers. Demarius Randall can kind of gamble. Quentin Rollins can play the nickel. You don't end up with Rollins outside. You don't end up with Randall trying to chase Stephon Diggs all over the place. Randall actually was very good as a rookie and then was pretty destructive against Jacksonville in week one. If you go back and look at that film, I was really excited at the end of that game because Randall honestly looked like a player ready to make that superstar jump in year two. And then I think he got hurt, and I think that Stephon Diggs in that week two game basically stole his lunch money and kind of the rest of that season. But I digress. Jacob, your thoughts on the Devon House signing?
1 year, $3.5 million, which is the reported terms. You guys,
is that what it is?
Yeah, it's 1 year, $3.5 million. Lord. So that, I mean, that those are the terms. I mean, the Packers were never going to be in on AJ Bouye. They were never going to be in on Stephon Gilmore. Cody, I know you like to joke about that, but it was just never going to happen. As soon as House was released, it was the most commonsensical thing to happen. The guy comes in, he already knows the defense that we're going to run, and you're never going to hear me hate on a guy who's got dreadlocks and plays in the secondary. That automatically makes you better. I think that's science. Ross, you were talking about Devontae being a verb. The Packers, as long as they don't Asamoah him, which is what the Jaguars did, which is to play a cornerback in a scheme that does not fit him. The Packers let him play man-to-man coverage. I think Devon House is going to be a good player. Like you said, he doesn't have to be a number one corner from the standpoint of he's not going to shadow, well, he may shadow Julio Jones from a body type standpoint, but he's not going to shadow the other team's number one receiver every single week.
But my God, if he gives you 800 snaps of average cornerback play for $3.5 million, like what?
Yeah, exactly. So you get that. You get bounce back seasons from Randall or Rollins, or if you get Randall and Rollins, that's great. You get a top 60 pick at cornerback. I mean, you're much deep. If nothing else, you're much deeper at cornerback than you were a season ago. From the standpoint of maybe a guy like Randall doesn't have to be rushed back from an injury like he was last year, and it was clear by the end of the year both him and Rollins were playing hurt, and they were playing because there was nobody else there. If House is in the fold, which he is now, they draft a guy. There is now you have House, draft pick, Randall, Rollins, Gunter. I would imagine they keep Hawkins and or Dorlan around. Maybe they take two corners in the draft.
I actually really like Josh Hawkins, but that's a thing for a different day.
Sure. And maybe they keep both of those. Maybe they keep one of those guys around. Maybe they take two corners, whatever. But you're much better at that position to the point where maybe you don't have to keep a guy on the field who's clearly playing with one leg and dragging that leg around to the point where he can maybe finally get healthy. But Devon House, it was no brainer. He knows the system. $3.5 million. He has a chance to, as he said, come home. And I have a chance to love a player who wears number 31, has dreadlocks, and he does that little house thing anytime he breaks him a pass, which I absolutely adore. Before, I mentioned it today, before I was Team Devontae, I was Team Devon House. Maybe it's a Devon thing, I don't know. But I like the signing. I know he's not going to come in and be Darrell Revis in his prime, but like you said, for $3.5 million, if he gives you average cornerback play, you're already in a – you didn't get average cornerback play from any of your corners last season. You're already in better position than you were a season ago.
No question about that. Let's just – we're going to have to kick her in gear here. We're careening into the 50-minute mark, and we haven't talked about this inside linebacker group at all. Just quick announcement. If you're getting this news from us, that's quite impressive that Nick Perry has returned, that Don Barclay has returned, and that Jaron Elliott has returned. I guess the Jaron Elliott thing kind of happened recently. Really hope they find a way to get that kid 400 snaps. I've been waiting for that. I'm Team Jaron. I'm excited that maybe we're a little bit thin at outside linebacker because I would love to see Jaron Elliott get a meaningful role in this defense, even if it's as a pass rush specialist, because I think he is that kind of playmaker. All right, inside linebackers. Boys, what round, if anything, are you looking for an inside linebacker? Cody.
Day three, hit me in 5, 6, or even 7. It's been a position that's just proven now. Thompson's been GM now for, this will be his 13th or 12th or 13th draft. He doesn't value it as high as some other teams. And this year, there should be no exception. The number of guys at the top of the heap are, really limited. I can't see him pulling the trigger on one of those guys early. Hit me with a day three guy with some upside, some speed, and or even an undrafted free agent, and I'd be just fine with that.
Jacob, where are you looking?
I'm in the same spot, 4 through 7. We were talking before the show, if Reuben Foster dropped, would they pick him? Thompson just doesn't value that position. If there was one guy he was going to pick, it was a few years ago, and it was Ryan Shazier. There's nobody like that in this year's class. They've got Jake Ryan. They like him. Ross, you really like him. I do, mm-hmm. too. I think they're going to move Clay Matthews around quite a bit. They've got Blake Martinez, who they like. They've got Joe Thomas as a specialized player. Find a guy in 4 through 7, like Cody said, with some upside, whoever that may be. But that tends to be when Ted picks his outside linebackers. That's when he took Ryan. That's when he took Martinez. That's when he's going to take him, 4 through 7.
I've got a caveat here, boys. I've done this before, not necessarily this year, but just previous years or shows. I've got an idea. My idea is a one guy or bust type of deal, and that is if Hassan Reddick is there at 29 and Ted wants to do it because he watches what New England does with Dante Hightower and what they used to do with Jamie Collins, cool. I'm in on that 100%. Give me Hassan Reddick. I would be super excited. Otherwise, no thanks on Reuben Foster. Even really no thanks on Zach Cunningham, although if that happened, I guess I wouldn't be mad. Zach Cunningham, I think, then he immediately becomes the best inside linebacker on the team. You play him with Jake Ryan on rundowns, and then you play him with Blake Martinez on passing downs, and then Joe Thomas comes in the dime. I think you could become a little bit more versatile. I think they should grab a body, though, just because right now Morgan Burnett is one of kind of the four on the two deep, and while I like him in that as a skill set guy there, I would like one more beef linebacker, I guess, in case something happens to Jake Ryan again, because that was a situation that they ran into last year that was a little bit concerning. So if it's not
Not one of those guys. Go ahead. Wait. Ben Bulwer, Clemson. Even a guy like Marcus Oliver, Indiana. I'm good right away unless it's Reddick, just because I think he is such a unique athlete in this class. So, guys, who are your favorite late-round guys? And that's who we're going to kind of talk about, who the popular guys are, basically fourth round or later, and which one those guys are your favorites. Jacob, go ahead.
Duke Riley out of LSU comes to mind. He's kind of a smaller guy. He played the Deion Jones role for them this year, if you will. I know Deion Jones is kind of the popular guy to mock to people now because the Falcons made the Super Bowl. The Packers can not really afford to do that because they don't play on turf 8 games out of the year. The Packers play on grass and in the freezing cold. So, Ross, you were mentioning beef linebackers. They kind of need those guys. You know, you mentioned Ben Bulwer. That's a guy. He's got a nose for the football. He's not the biggest. He's not the fastest. He's not the most athletic. I hate this phrase, but I'm going to use it. The guy's a football player. He just always finds a way to be in the mix on something there. And when you get to this point in the draft, those are the kinds of guys that you're looking for. Those are two guys that I'd really look for there. There's some upside with those guys. Riley would probably be the one. He's more athletic. He probably has to add some weight a little bit. He weighs in at about 235, but he does have some speed to him, and he has some athletic ability. So I think that he has probably the most upside of those guys that you find on day 3.
Cody?
All right, I'll list off a couple of them. A couple of guys are intriguing to me, and some guys I caught during the year that, you know, made me look them up. That's always the best part about scouting. I don't know about you guys, but you just tune into a game, and all of a sudden some guy catches your eye and he starts making some plays. It's fun to kind of dive into his backstory a little bit, look at his numbers and all that. So a couple guys did that to me during the year. One was Kevin Davis from Colorado State. He's 6'2", 235. A really good player. He actually was asked to rush the pass for quite a bit. He can make plays behind the line of scrimmage and has some sideline-to-sideline ability. Seventh round of free agent with him. The other guy who really caught my eye was Jimmy Gilbert from Colorado. 6'5", 234. Now, it looks like a wide receiver. It was, you know, the big joke about him, and he was asked to rush the passer a lot at Colorado, but will be asked to be more off the ball, obviously, in the NFL. At 234, you're not going to consistently hold up well on the edge. Both those guys, I would say, are seventh round to undrafted free agent types. Another kid that was hurt for the majority of last year, flirted with coming out in the draft 2 years ago, was Jalen Reeves-Maven from Tennessee. A little shorter guy, 6 foot, 230. You can throw on, you know, do yourself a favor if you just have 5 minutes or whatever, throw on a highlight tape of him. You'll see some ability. He can lay some wood, and he really closes in a hurry. He's a lot of fun to watch. I think the other guy who kind of caught my interest more so after his testing was Jared Evans from Oklahoma. Jordan Evans, excuse me. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, I mean, this guy, if he was invited to the combine, he would have been one of the top linebackers in every testing drill. I need to go back and rewatch his film, but that's kind of what the combine and pro days are for, is you see somebody's testing numbers, makes you go back and kind of rewatch to see what they could do well on the field. But his athletic testing numbers definitely have me intrigued, and I know Thompson, of course, you know, a descendant of Al Davis, certainly likes to look at his numbers and find the athletes positions.
Yeah, I am kind of, you know, I take a lot of the cues, I guess, my own scouting and projection from what goes on in Green Bay from Thompson. I've grown an affinity for guys coming out of the Pac-12. I think it's a more competitive conference than people understand. I think that, you know, basically it's the kids out of California that are making up those schools. It's a huge population, you know, a big population state. Talk about programs like Oregon, UCLA, what have you. Impressive football program, certainly. And a guy out of UCLA, Jayon Brown. Short guy, 6 foot, 230. But a guy I think I would take in the third or fourth round, that might go in the fifth or sixth, run the 4.7 40. Nothing wrong with that. 31.5-inch vertical leap, nothing wrong with that either. He's just a good football player and a guy that I think the film is maybe a little bit better than what you're seeing, just because potentially the testing's not elite, not somebody that made a ton of splash plays, but I think just somebody that is going to provide good value for a football team. So who is your favorite inside linebacker, period? I already talked about mine, Hassan Reddick, even more than Reuben Foster, just because I think he can affect the passing game in so many different ways. Foster kind of is what he is. Jacob, your favorite guy?
I'm with you on Reddick because something I always ask about Alabama players, players that play on teams that are really great defenses is, you know, is the sum of the whole greater than the individual parts? Reuben Foster had the benefit of playing behind guys like Jonathan Allen. Hassan Reddick, playing at Temple, didn't get that benefit. He's a versatile piece that I think you can use him in a variety of ways. You move him around. He played edge at Temple. I don't think he can play the edge consistently, so he's been an off-the-ball linebacker ever since getting in out of the combine and stuff like that. But he's a versatile piece. You can move around. He can play well in coverage. I think he's athletic enough to do those things. I think he'd be a really effective blitzer, which would come from his edge-rushing background. I kind of liken it for Packer fan usage, kind of the way the Packers used Clay Matthews when he was an inside linebacker. You can move him inside. You can move him outside. I like him in those sorts of roles. Again, I don't have the questions that I would have about, you know, are you really as good as that? Or, you know, did you kind of have the benefit of playing around some other really big-time studs? I know that you could kind of ask that question about any Alabama player, but there's some of them that just really jump off the tape. Foster's one of them. He's an off-the-ball linebacker that played with a really good front seven. Ultimately, I do think he's going to be a good player as well, but Hassan Reddick, I like him just a little bit more.
Cody, your favorite off-the-ball linebacker in this class?
Reuben Foster for me. I understand concerns about his injuries. You know, it's been well documented now that Saban just really runs his guys, you know, to the bone, literally. And he's got some concerns, and he wasn't able to participate in the combine, then had this scuffle there. All that aside, you put on the table Reuben Foster. I mean, he is all over the field. He hits people. He's a presence in the middle. Tone setter for the defense. I think he can cover better than he probably is given credit for. He blitzes really well. And, of course, he can stack and shed in the hole and make plays in the backfield. I'm a big Reuben Foster fan. You look at the lineage of going back and on how well they're taught in the 3-4 defense at Alabama with C.J. Mosley having success, and well, Reggie Ragland didn't get a chance to play this year, but you know they're well coached. They understand, they're disciplined. Reuben Foster, if he fell in the first round, barring any kind of medical concerns that the Packers had, you know, it'd be a guy I'd be tempted to take. It would really kind of create a different face of the defense. You know, no more would it be Matthew's hair flowing. It might still be Daniels flexing or whatever, but I think as far as the tone, the mindset, I think Daniels would love to have somebody like Reuben Foster behind him, knowing that he's going to come with the wood when he hits you. So Foster is my favorite linebacker in this class.
Cody, who is the most undervalued off-the-ball linebacker in this class?
I'm going to go with Anthony Walker Jr. from Northwestern. And undervalued in the sense, all right, so 2 years ago, this guy was, you know, in the top 10 of tackles for loss in the country, was all over the field for Northwestern defense, you know, super good speed, a little lighter, but he was, you know, an absolute playmaker. And then the start of this year, for some reason, came in, like, overweight. And I don't know if he was advised by his, you know, some people that, hey, you should pack on some pounds for the NFL. They're going to ask, you know, you're going to need to, you know, endure the rigors of it. But he came in slower and lethargic. It just didn't even look like the same player. But by season's end, you know, after he worked off that excess, he looked like the same old Anthony Walker that of 2 years ago. And I think he's probably more in the day two value and somewhere where Thompson generally doesn't, you know, draft an inside linebacker. But if he were to fall to day three, I think that's something, someone that could interest Thompson a bit. Kind of as a do-it-all guy, you can play the run and the pass, but he just kind of didn't get any of the draft steam or buzz at the beginning of the year, and it really just never picked up for him as the season went on, probably because he played at Northwestern. But, you know, 2 years ago, he was one of the better linebackers in the country, so he's someone to keep an eye out who's kind of flying under the radar.
I already mentioned my guy, Jayon Brown. Love the Pac-12, love his game, enjoy watching him on film. Asked him, you know, asked you guys about him a little bit during the pre-production meeting. Interested to get into a few more of his games. Jacob, the most underrated off-the-ball linebacker in this class?
I'll go with Hardy Nickerson out of Illinois. I know a lot of people probably haven't watched the Illini, and for good reason, trust me. Watching them play Michigan this year, it was almost painful. I felt bad for Lovie Smith as he tries to rebuild that program, but he transferred for his senior year. His father, Hardy Nickerson, the former linebacker that actually was kind of a free agent bust with the Packers as a coach there, he was a good linebacker for California when he was playing out there. And he actually had a decent year for the Illini, had a good game against Michigan. People are saying he's an undrafted free agent type player. I think he's a draftable player in the later rounds, you know, round 5, 6, or 7. But he's got some decent size to him. He's a taller player. He's 6'2". He's listed at about 232 pounds. So he'd have to add a little bit of weight. But again, you're looking at an old school player, probably a special teams type player. But he's got some value late in the draft. If he becomes a core special teams player as a fifth-round pick, sixth-round pick, you can't ask for much more than that. But I think he's a draftable player with some upside as a linebacker. And you know that he was taught while being coached by, one, his NFL dad, and two, Lovie Smith is, say what you will about what you thought about him as a head coach, he's a very good defensive coach. So you know he was coached well, at least from that standpoint.
Absolutely. So back to the last question we asked. Cody, what is the likelihood that the Green Bay Packers draft an off-the-ball linebacker with one of those first 6 picks in the first 5 rounds?
I'll go, give me 10%. I think they like Blake Martinez. He definitely flashed a lot. I think Jake Ryan had some games, you know, they put together that were really, really good. They retained Joe Thomas. I think we'll see Matthews more on the inside, Burnett more on the inside. I just don't feel like it's a position they need to address. I don't want to go 0%. Too specific, but as low as 10%.
Jacob?
Yeah, I'm kind of in that range as well. They've used fourth-round picks each of the last 2 drafts. I'll say 15% just because I think it's a little bit higher, but not by much. You mentioned Morgan Burnett. I think he'll play there some more. Joe Thomas, I think he'll play there some more. With the rate Ted Thompson spending on free agents, you know, maybe we'll be surprised tomorrow morning and Dante Hightower will be a Packer. And I say that mostly in jest, but, they could add somebody there before the draft as well, just to get another body in there. But this is kind of this is similar to the defensive line, kind of an eh class. Not a whole lot of guys to get a whole lot of excitement over. The other reality is there's, a lot of other positions that probably need a lot more attention: edge rusher, cornerback, wide receiver, running back, offensive line, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'll say 15%. There's enough guys there, I think.
I'm right there at 25%. I just don't think it's something that this this front office group is going to, really have a lot of emphasis on. But at the same time, I still think they need that third beef linebacker. I think they need somebody who can play if Jake Ryan can't. I think they've got to get that figured out at some point. And if they catch somebody in the 5th round with one of those 2 picks, that would absolutely knock shot me at all. So that's where I am on that. Guys, thanks for coming on the show again. Thank you, listeners, for checking out the show. Once again, you can catch my work at Cheesehead TV. The draft guide is coming out soon. I submitted my 18-page Google Doc to the godfather of Cheesehead TV, Al Bracco, just this morning. Jacob, how are you doing on your positions?
I am done. It's good to go and submitted. Interior offensive line. A lot of you guys, you may want to check that out because Packers will probably be in the market.
Absolutely. And you can always check out Cody's thoughts on the draft. Check him out on Twitter at Seabauer NFL Draft.
You got it. And I got a really comprehensive Ted Thompson kind of put together a big board for what he looks for draft trend-wise. It's all keyed up. We're waiting for the editor to publish it, but it's ready to go. It'll be a good reference for everyone to go back to, bookmark it when it drops.
I actually think it literally just dropped. So, guys, check that out on Cheesehead TV. Like I said, Cody is a excellent contributor to that site, especially when it comes to the draft. So one more time, thank you all, and go Pack, go.